Agents Podcast.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Follow a Boss. Follow a Boss is the real estate CRM that turns every agent into a top performer. Follow a Boss is packed with features, but it's intuitive and easy to use, so agents love working with it, and it integrates with everything. Use multiple lead sources? Guess what? Follow a Boss keeps them all organized. Want to try new marketing channels? Switch website providers? Plug them right into Follow Up Boss. Visit followupboss.com/lab coat to see how Follow Up Boss helps you close more deals. That's followupboss.com/lab coat.
As a real estate agent, you are pretty much the foundational cornerstone or keystone of every transaction. In other words, if a client has a question about something that involves the inspection, the foundation, or maybe something with the roof, are you going to advise on that, or are you going to turn them over to a specialist, an expert? If somebody has questions that might be pertaining to legal issues, are you going to refer them to an attorney, or are you going to try to handle them yourself? That is exactly the point of today's conversation, which is specifically going to be about 1031 exchanges. And one of the biggest problems or issues that we see in our industry is that too many consumers end up going to a 1031 exchange expert or start inquiring about a 1031 exchange after it's too late to set it up. And that's why we're bringing on our guest today, Joe Rivas with Asset Exchange Company. He is the business development manager in the state of Arizona. Several other states can work with you all over the country, and he is going to help you understand how you should be better advising your client so you don't have this happen to you. Joe, welcome to the show, my friend.
I'm happy to be here.
So let me just digress for a minute. And, you know, I think there's two things I want you to do before we get deep into the 1031 conversation. Number one, tell us a little bit about yourself. What is your background? How'd you end up in this business? And then after we do that, I want you to just kind of give us, the agent that may not know, a basic description or understanding of what a 1031 exchange is. I hope everybody knows, but I don't want to take it for granted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my background in real estate, there's a few years of landing, about 5 years of landing there. And that's, and after landing, I started with a home warranty company, a bigger national home warranty company, Old Republic. And I spent 5 years there. And at that time there, I met someone in the 1031 exchange industry. They were talking to me, recruited me, and I moved on to that side of the business. So with 1031 exchange, I've been around for about 5.5 years total. Before then, I spent about 8 years with lending in the home warranty side of the industry. So I'm with Asset Exchange here for the last year or so. And it's such a unique product, and so many people don't know about it. So getting the word out how I can not only, you know, save them money, but also help that real estate agent grow their business is something that I enjoy doing. So
it's music to a real estate agent's ears, my friend.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think, you know, I think I probably qualify as an average knowledge of 1031 exchange. And let me just give you my primitive description of a 1031 exchange. This is what I think it is, which is, you know, I have a property, whether it's personal or an investment property, and I know that I'm going to be selling the property. I'm going to come into a lump of cash, right? That I'm going to earn some money on it, and I can take that money that I earn, and I can set it aside to be used for another investment, and now that way I do not have to pay taxes on those earnings, on that revenue. And I have a limited amount of time in order to do so. How did I do?
That's pretty good. Okay. I mean, that's a lot more than some people know. Because here's where I may correct you a little bit. It is not tax-free. It is tax deferred.
Got it.
So as long as you keep exchanging, you can keep deferring. Tax-free. The great thing is about a 1031 is it's the wealth building tool. About a 1031, because if you own that exchange property for a very long time, and let's say you happen to pass away, your heirs, son, daughter, whatever, they take a step up in basis on that property. So they don't have to pay the capital gains taxes on it At that point, they can sell. You know, if they bought it for $300,000, now it's worth $1 million. That $700,000 capital gains is not taxable at that point.
Really?
Because yes, because they take the step up in basis, and that is the great thing about a 1031, and that's why it's considered one of the greatest wealth building tools to the real estate investor.
So give us a more eloquent description of what a 1031 exchange is.
So a 1031 is for the investor who is looking to sell their property and acquire a new one. And when I mean investment property, something that you have as a commercial or that you collect revenue from, like a rental property. Once they sell that property, there's that capital gains part of it. So like I said, you bought it for $300,000 and now it's worth $700,000. The IRS wants their cut out of that $400,000. Well, one way to avoid paying the IRS and reinvest into a new property is to buy another investment property. That's the like-kind aspect. You have to buy another property that you're going to use for the same reason as an investment, collect revenue from, whether it be commercial or residential. So you defer those taxes and you get to reinvest into another property and not give a big chunk to the IRS. So that's what the investor really likes about it, because they're just going to do it for the rest of their life. And they're going to build more equity, collect revenue from that unit and build wealth.
So you mentioned you're very specific about investment property only. So I just want to clarify that. You cannot do this on your personal residence.
No.
Okay.
Because on your personal residence, the government kind of gives you a break already. $250,000, the homeowner tax exclusion credit, a max up to $500,000. So that kind of, you know, satisfies the needs of the homeowner there. But on an investment property, they do not give you that break. They start taxing you from the first dollar you make.
They treat that as income, basically. Yeah.
Pretty much, yes.
So, and then you also mentioned that, you didn't mention the time period, but actually I want to mention, so as an investor, if you do not set up a 1031 prior to closing and you close and then you make the $300,000, let's just say, and you want to now use that for your next property, if you didn't 1031 it, you're first going to pay taxes on that, the earnings, right?
Yes.
The gain before you can invest. But if you did it as a 1031, you get to reinvest 100% of it.
Totally. So let's say you sell that property and you close escrow today. Tomorrow, that person calls me, wants to do a 1031. It's too late. I mean, even the moment it hits your bank account, the escrow sends it to your bank account, that is now taxable. There's no way going back. But let's say that person set up a 1031 account, whether it be weeks or hours before closing on the relinquished property. The relinquished property means the property you're selling. Then they could, the money that's in escrow at the time, once you receive the funds, is forwarded to the accommodator, which is the exchange company. We hold it there until you find the next property. And there's timelines involved. They give you for 180 days from the moment you close to complete the transaction. So there's plenty of time there. Inside that 180 days, there's a 45-day identification period. So from day zero, which is the closing date, to day 45, the government wants you to identify three properties. Out of those three properties before day 45, one of those has to go into escrow after day 45. So let's say you sell a house today, closes escrow, you open a 1031 account, you have the time clock starts there. Day 40, you identify three properties that you're interested in. And you send me the identification letter with all those three properties, all the information. Then after day 45, between day 45 and day 180, you must choose one of those properties and go into escrow and complete the contract in order to be 100% tax deferred exchange.
So there's different layers here. You
absolutely.
You just don't have 6 months. You have to identify a property within 45 days.
Right. And that can be the challenge and stress for some people, because let's say you identify three and two of them are going to contract with someone else. You know, someone beats you to them.
Yeah.
So kind of doing your homework and knowing, and I always advise, you know, if it takes take your time. Use the 40 days up to make sure you're sure of that property. During COVID, it was very tough because no one was waiting for you to sell your house so you can buy one. So identifying the first 45 days was the tough part because houses were not staying on the market that long. So you, once that day 45 came, you might have to re-identify, find more properties to take place of the ones you originally identified. So there was a lot of craziness going around during that time, but now it's a little bit easier. The houses are staying on the market longer. Once you send me that identification letter, most of them are going to be on the market. So, but after day 45, that's when you have to make your choice. So,
got it. And you know, and I think from that perspective, you really need to start your due diligence on searching, you know, as soon as you go under contract with the house you're selling or the property that you're selling, so you give yourself more time and you don't feel that stress of finding a property. Because that's, I mean, in today's day and age with low inventory, there's a hell of a lot of competition on every investment property by and large.
True. Yes. And that usually happens, you know, for the savvy investor or the investor who's done 1031 exchanges, they realize that. But for the new investor, it may be too stressful. And that's where I see a lot of like pushback. They want to do it, but they're scared. So yeah. That's why talking to an exchange company, making sure they lead you through the steps, give you some timelines, it eases that. And the sooner you talk to one, the better, the earlier you can start your search and the less stressful it's going to be. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had mentioned, you know, when we were talking off air that there's basically four things to know about a 1031, which I think we've kind of touched on at least one of them, but let's go down that list just because if you're listening to this, this is that list. You should stop what you're doing. You know, if you're on the treadmill, you're driving, maybe just, you know, make a mental note of when this is in the episode and go back, write these things down, put it in your little folder. Every single time you're working with an investor, you need to make sure you're advising of this, whether they have the intent of doing it or not. Over-educate, because it's just going to elevate your status as the authority, as their real estate advisor. So what are the four things that you say you need to know, everybody needs to know about a 1031?
Perfect. I'll point them out one through four, and then I'll talk a little bit about them. First is the property qualifications. That's the like-kind aspect. Two is a timeline, the one we just talked about, day zero, day 180, and in between the day 45. Third is the identification period, which, you know, if you are selling one home, buying another home, you get three properties to identify. But if for the investor who wants to exchange it to multiple properties, there's a different rule for that, and we'll talk about it in a second. And then the fourth is the tax deferral part of it, where all the cash that was generated from the sale of the home has to be reinvested. And we'll get into that a little further. So back to the property qualifications, that's the like-kind aspect. The like-kind, most people think it's, I buy a condo, I have to buy another condo. No, it's just, it has to be used for investment purpose. So whether it's a condo or a single family home, you must have a tenant in it. You must generate revenue from that property. Your primary residential does not count for that. The two is, which I think number one is seems simple enough, but after every presentation, there's always one person that calls and asks me about their personal home. I go, you just can't do a 1031 on that. But you, like I do mention, you do get that tax benefit on your personal residence, just not investment. Two is a timeline. From day zero is when you sell your property. Day 45 is when we need the identification letter stating that you have three properties. After day 45 to day 180, you must go into contract and complete the sale. This for the it's plenty of time. The time where 180 kind of comes into play here and it becomes a little stressful for the investor is when they buy land that they want to build on. If you don't have a structure there, can you finish that property in 6 months? That can be challenging. And so that's where the timeline kind of comes in a little more, where you need to have all your permits, get all your contractors set. 6 months doesn't seem like enough time to build a house, but it can be done. It's just a little more work. Three is the identification period. Identification. There's two ways to identify properties. One is the three property rule, which is the most common. You sell a property and the government says you can identify up to three properties. Out of those three properties, one must go into escrow. The second is for the investor who wants to exchange into multiple properties. So let's say they sell a million dollar house in California. They want to buy two properties in Texas. So government says you can identify up to 200% of what you sold for. So now you can go to, in Texas and say, okay, well, I identify these four properties. They're 250 each equaling, or 500,000 each equaling 2 million. So because you're buying more properties, they're not going to say, well, you get to double the identification. They just basically put a percentage on it. So in this case, if you sell for a million, you can identify up to 200% or 2 million worth of properties. It can be three properties, it can be two properties, or it can be eight properties. And the last is a tax deferral requirement, where if you sell for 800,000, you must also purchase an exchange for 800,000. Just because you have 400,000 of equity doesn't mean you can take that 400 and buy the property. You must reinvest all of it to make it 100%. That's the rules of the 1031 IRS code, that if you sell for 800,000, you have to not only bring your 400,000 of equity, but come up with the other 400 in the loan or cash or however you see fit, but you have to meet that same amount or greater to what you sold for.
So if you sold a house, if you owed 400,000, you sold it for 800,000, you made 400 because the other half of it paid off the other loan. And then you, so you come to your, you then now want to do a 1031. You now have to buy a property of at least 800,000 or more, and you can apply your 400,000. You have to apply all of the 400,000. You can't take some of it, all of it, but it's got to be to a property that's 800,000. You can't go buy a 400,000 just and basically have it for cash.
Right. You can't buy down that much, because then you're getting taxed for what you didn't spend. So if you only spend 400,000, you're going to get taxed on the other 400,000, which at that point doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But if, let's say you want to buy down, let's say I found something for 750, then that 50,000 difference, that's, you get taxed on that. So it may make sense people to buy just a little bit down. You also get to kind of write off whatever your expenses are, like title, escrow, real estate agent commissions. So you can buy down a little bit and still be at 100% tax deferred exchange. But when you buy down so much, the tax implications might be so great that it may not be worth doing it at that point. So
got it.
Awesome. So the closer you meet that number, the more sense it makes and the more money you'll have to defer. So
are there any minimums or maximums?
No, absolutely not. No.
So
you can, as long as you, whatever you sell, if you buy that meets it or exceeds it, you should be fine.
Yeah. I mean, so if you sell a property for 50 grand and you make 50 grand, let's say you're free and clear, you just got to buy another property that's at least 50 grand, which isn't hard to do.
Right.
Got it.
And commercial then property.
If it's 10 million, it's 10 million and it's free and clear and you clear 10 million and you want a 1031 exchange, you got to buy something 10 million or more.
Yes. If you want to buy down, then you'll get taxed at the difference, whatever that is.
Yep.
And like I said, to some people that still may be better than paying taxes.
So, wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So is there anything else we're missing here, or do you have any like examples that you could share?
Examples of, this week I've been having a lot of investors who live in another country. You know, so they own property in the States, and they want to do a 1031 exchange. Well, with 1031 exchanges, they don't allow foreign, for you to exchange or buy foreign property and exchange that. But for the foreign investor, you can exchange the property you own here. Kind of two ways to do it. You can pay taxes 15% FIRPTA on the property that you sell, right? Which if you sell for a million, you have $150,000 worth of taxes you owe, which may not make sense. I guess if you do the math, it's like, well, it's too much. I'm just going to hold on to it. The only way I would say around that is if that foreign seller has a tax ID number, because most of them will not have any social or tax ID. And that's why at closing, they hold that 15%, because the IRS isn't going to send a bill to someone in Canada or Mexico or somewhere else. They're just going to collect 15% for any taxes due. So the only way around that is to get a tax ID number. And, you know, right now you're looking at about 6 to 8 weeks to even get, if you're going to get one. So being prepared, if you have a foreign investor who's selling property wants to do a 1031 is key, because there's, if they don't have a tax ID number, it takes time. If they want to list tomorrow and they don't have that, more than likely, it's not going to happen. There is some tax attorneys that will expedite that. They, you know, you can find them at your local board. But in order to do that, I would say be prepared, because it's going to take 4 to 6 weeks at the quickest, maybe even 8 weeks. And I'm seeing, I've gone 3 calls on that the last week and a half. And you go through different types of calls. And that call to me is like, I'm learning so much more about it, because it's happening a lot more. And the process basically is what I just mentioned. Just takes a lot of homework and preparation before that happens, because if you're trying to do a 1031 and you don't have all your ducks in a row, it's probably not going to happen unless they're willing to wait to close the sale that home in another month, which is a tough thing to do. So,
yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting, because what would be your advice to a real estate agent? So as I mentioned in the beginning, would you advise on things that are outside of your expertise or that could end you up in a lawsuit of some sort?
Right. So right? I get so many questions. Good, great question. I get so many questions on, hey, what's my tax bracket, or how much am I going to get taxed? Well, it's always good to say, ask your CPA, talk to a tax advisor. And a lot of times that's the first person that I send them to, because they'll get a better understanding of what they have coming or what can happen. Because we're the 1031 exchange accommodator. We set up everything for them. We don't give them tax advice, because legally we're not allowed to. Yeah. So that's when I work with CPAs, tax advisors, when I work with investors who basically go to them before they go to me, it works a lot smoother. But those questions, I always advise them, talk to your tax advisor. They'll lead you down the right path, and then we'll go ahead and set this up for you. But that's somewhat of what I get. Also, some of the questions, some of the things that I get here with the new investors is, you know, I own my property for 6 months. I want to do a 1031 exchange. Well, that's not enough time. IRS doesn't have a rule on how long period you have to own this house, but they want your intent to be, well, I've used this as an investment. So most accommodators, they recommend 24 months of ownership or 2 tax returns, because at that point, you know, the intent was that you're using this property as an investment. So the IRS wants to see that, like I said, 24 months, anything less than 24 months. If you have your CPA sign off on it and says that, yeah, you're good to go, we'll be more than happy to assist and, you know, help you out with that. So
in other words, no flipping.
No flipping. No, IRS looks at that as inventory, not as investment. So it just doesn't have the seasoning, the time, and it's probably going to be a no-go. So
interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's good. I'm glad you brought that up. Is there anything else that we didn't cover? Because I think it's interesting that you brought up the foreign investor, because I think that's applicable to, you know, to an Arizona, California, Hawaii, Washington, so, you know, Florida, a lot of the places on the East Coast, Texas, right. Maybe. So I'm glad you brought that up. But is there anything else that's important to bring up?
There's why do people do a 1031 exchange? Well, the tax deferral part of it is number one. But for the investor who's ready to retire, do they want to manage 10 properties? Do they want, you have 10 tenants, you have 10 people you deal with. They may just want to just slow down a little bit. They're ready for retirement. They're ready to say, hey, I'm done doing all this work as a landlord or as an investor. But I still enjoy that revenue that I bring in from these investment properties. So what they may do is they may exchange those 10 properties into 1 or 2 properties and still manage the burden of what they have to do as a landlord to a lesser degree. So why do people do exchanges? There's different reasons. And those being one of the most popular reasons is they just want to not have that much work to do anymore. They're ready for retirement, and they want to downsize their business. One other type of exchange you saw a lot more during COVID is the reverse exchange. This is the complete opposite. So a delayed exchange or a forward exchange, what we do now, the most common way to do it is when you sell your property and you buy a new one. But on a reverse exchange is you see a property, you want that property, you fell in love with that property, but you haven't sold yours yet. You can do a reverse exchange. You can buy that property and then your timeline start, your day zero starts when you close escrow on the one you buy. And in 180 days, you must sell your property. So this can be a little more pricier because what happens in a reverse exchange is once you buy the property, you basically own two properties. You own the property that you just bought and you bought the one you haven't sold. IRS doesn't allow that. So what happens there is the exchange company, the accommodator, takes title to the property you just purchased. So then you meet the IRS guidelines of being the one owner, not having two properties. So then you can sell your property. Once you sell that property, we release title back on the property you purchased. So this is where, remember COVID when you weren't, there was no contingent offers. Things were flying off, you know, everything was selling pretty quick. No one was gonna wait for you to sell your property, but this is a property you wanted. That's where reverse exchanges happen a lot more often. They are more expensive just because of all the work you have to do. But you know, it may make sense to the investor who really wants a certain property. So,
got it. And there's also a construction or improvement exchange as well, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you sell your property, you want to buy land to develop on. You can definitely do that. How that works is basically we also take title, exchange accommodator title holder. We become that. So we take title of that property and you manage all the construction. Once you get invoices from your contractors on what the work they're doing, you basically send that to the accommodator because we open up an account that's going to hold the money in there. We pay your contractors to that account. And inside that 180 days, once it's built and all contractors are paid, we release title back to you on that property. Let's say you're coming to day 178 and you say, hey, well, we still need quite a bit to do. Can we do it after day 180? You can't. It has to be completed 100% before day 180. So that's where I mentioned the challenge of building inside 180 days. It could still happen, but it's challenging.
Yeah, especially nowadays.
Exactly.
Awesome. Is there anything that would be important to point out in terms of just the execution of a 1031? So, I mean, you know, I think first and foremost, what's most important is just having these conversations well in advance and understanding what you have to do well in advance of actually needing to do it. Cause that's where the mistake ultimately ends up happening. But is there anything else that someone just needs to be kind of privy to as to something that they would have to do as a part of this process?
You know, For us, when I have a new exchanger, communication is key. I collect their phone number, email, any other spouse's email, because I need to send them out timelines because they're so important. If they don't have the identification letter before day 45, the deal's done. I mean, they pay taxes. A lot of new investors don't see how important that is. So I stress how important those timelines are, especially for someone new. And I think that's where I set the expectation. You're going to be receiving different things from as soon as your property closes because those timelines are important. And it's mostly on us to let them know that expect this is coming and set the expectation that these dates are very important in order for you to do the exchange. And that's how I kind of... That to me is like for a new investor and a lot of people, the majority of people I'm working with, it's the first time. So the handholding process is there, but that's kind of where you earn your value as a facilitator. So.
Awesome. Last question, only because I was, I've been perusing your site as we've been talking and you do have, there's two there's two, I would say, outside of the United States, like reference points. And one is Espanol, which is obvious, right? Just for Spanish speaking. But the other one is, it says Chinese. And then there's a video there. Why do you specify that versus any other country? Is it because of just that many investors? There's more Chinese investors in the States than any other country?
Well, there is. There's a huge part of that. And also being, we're based in California, you see a lot more influence on Asian investors. And that's a market that's been investing quite a bit and new to the 1031 world. And that's, it's big enough where we need that information for them. Same thing with Spanish. It's also part of the country we're located in. It's more influence on that. And so we have escrow exchange officers that speak those languages. I speak Spanish myself, so I'm able to help people that want to learn that information in Spanish, because the 1031 verbiage is tough enough in English to try to understand. Try and interpret that to a new language. You know, I've gotten good with it, but it's a challenge, and you want to have people understand it because it can be quite complex. So
yeah, I can imagine. And I imagine you must have some Chinese speaking.
We do. Yes. And that's, it's a great help. It's good to have that, because then you could always refer that and make sure those people, that person understands the process completely. The last thing you want to do is a failed exchange because they didn't understand.
Yeah, so. No doubt about it. So Joe, tell me, what's if an agent's listening to this and just says, you know what, I don't have a 1031 expert in my corner, I need to add you to my Rolodex. What is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
So my phone number, my cell phone, it's always on. It's 206-369-6790. Or my company line, 877-471-1031. Email works as well. Joe at A as in Apple, X as an X-ray, 1031.com.
AX as an AX. AX, yeah. You said?
Asset Exchange, but AX.
Yeah. Got it. And give me that cell phone number one more time.
206-369-6790.
Awesome. I think that's going to become super useful, because there's not a whole hell of a lot of probably 1031 experts out there, and especially in many markets. And I know I asked you this off the record, but I want to ask you again. You're based out of Arizona. You're licensed in certain states, but you can help agents in any market. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Anywhere in the continental United States. IRC code 1031 is a U.S. tax code. So we're able to help someone in New York, Washington, Florida, Texas, Arizona. It all applies the same. Some state rules are different, but when it comes to 1031 and the IRS code, it's throughout the country. So
awesome. Joe, super insightful, man. I appreciate you being on today. I know this is going to be useful for our audience, and hope we stay in touch.
Awesome, Jeff. Hey, thanks a lot. Take care. Have a good one.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Follow a Boss. Follow a Boss is the real estate CRM that turns every agent into a top performer. Follow a Boss is packed with features, but it's intuitive and easy to use, so agents love working with it, and it integrates with everything. Use multiple lead sources? Guess what? Follow a Boss keeps them all organized. Want to try new marketing channels? Switch website providers? Plug them right into Follow Up Boss. Visit followupboss.com/lab coat to see how Follow Up Boss helps you close more deals. That's followupboss.com/lab coat. Lab Coat Agents Podcast.